1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five one is our text number. Katie Hannon sitting in for Joe again this week. The Veep has arrived. Mike Pence is in town here on his first official visit as the US Vice President. On his Twitter account today, he tells us, on April the 11th, 1923, an Irish immigrant named Richard Michael Cawley stepped onto Ellis Island and began our family's story in America. Mike Kelleher, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You knew Richard Michael Cawley?
Well, let's put it this way. This was 1963, and I was a young, wild Irish Kerry man in Chicago. Great place to be in those days. But put it this way, about 70% of the bus drivers you had in Chicago at the time, and many other Irish cities in America, American cities, they were Irish drivers. That was a great job for the Irish. And it so happened on the street that we lived, on Honore Street, in the parish of Visitation Parish off the Boulevard, that man lived down the block. He was a bus driver. No, there was nothing significant about him other than he was from Sligo and he drove a bus. End of story. And I wouldn't have, his name wouldn't have rang a bell with me. But suddenly when you start thinking to yourself and you find out that this, his grandson, is now the Vice President of the United States. So there you know. You never know who you bump into, isn't it true?
You never know who you bump into. Tell me a bit about your own story, Mike. When did you leave the kingdom?
I left the kingdom in 1962 on my 18th birthday.
Wow.
Never been out of the parish of Glenfesk before there. You never heard of Glenfesk, I saw.
Oh, we all heard of Glenfesk. You're talking to a Kerry woman, Mike.
What part are you from?
I'm a Listowel woman. Or Douai, I should say.
That's a wealthy part of Kerry. Listowel up there, the Golden Vale. Oh, sorry, now, you know, when you're looking down at poor old Glenfesk down there, anyway, to return to English, I immigrated in 1962. I immigrated to New York, and a year later I was working in Chicago on a construction site. And what can you say? Life was like that. I drifted along there. I didn't drift. I walked my arse off. Those were the days when we had no mammy to send us money or nothing. You had to provide for yourself. But one of the great turning parts in my life was in 1967, I got drafted into the U.S. Army. And that was the height of the Vietnam era, and there was a lot of people running the opposite direction. But I had gone to America on a green card, and one of the stipulations was that after I was 6 months in the United States, I was registered for the draft. And I did. And when I got drafted, I responded, and I didn't put up no puss on me. And I must confess, I had the two best years of my life, Katie.
I'm worried. Did you end up in combat?
No, Katie. When you went to the military, everybody is trained how to fire a rifle and a few other things. And then they put you into a thing called MOS. That's a selected group that they train you in. And what they done is they made a military policeman out of me. And then they sent me to a place called Fort Myer, Virginia. Now, many people may not know what Fort Myer, Virginia is, but Fort Myer, Virginia is like a horseshoe around Arlington Cemetery. Fort Myer, Virginia is also the home of the Joint Chief of Staffs. Every one of the president's military people who surround him live in Fort Myer, basically because they have beautiful housing there and security. It's a top one gate from Fort Myer, by the way, and I often stood it as a military policeman at 12 o'clock at night. One of the gates goes into the Pentagon, okay?
Right, gotcha.
So you can imagine where you are. Now, back in those days, 1967, I hadn't a clue about those things. My free time, I didn't look every day and say, look at where I am. But I realized at times, I pinched myself, and I walked through Arlington Cemetery and go down there. We were there for many times on security details. And I said to myself, you know, 6 months ago, I was back in Chicago working in construction. I was working, by the way, I worked for a sewerage company. And that include new sewers, but mainly repairing broken sewers. So you can just imagine, my Kelleher didn't see it very easy, but I was a happy man. And here I found myself in Fort Myer, Virginia, Arlington Cemetery. And I said, by God, I said, you never know. So here, my pinster's grandfather came from Ireland, and his grandson today is the Vice President of the United States. Isn't that nice?
And tell me, go back to when you met Mike Pence's grandfather. As you say, he was nobody special, I suppose, at the time.
No.
But did you, I mean, was he somebody you knew fairly well, or?
I remember, I always had that thing about, I had many uncles and aunts in America. Most all of my mother's and father's family immigrated to America. Isn't that unbelievable? My mother was the only one to stay in Ireland, and my father went to America, but when the Wall Street crash came, he came home, met my mother, married her, and Sin Marathashe. Anyway, the nice thing about it was, I remember him, and I remember there would be a lot of older Irish people there we'd meet, and they would give you a little bit of advice, and I remember him, and then there was another Irish man that used to hang out with him. I remember him. He was a bus driver also. And he always said, you know, lads, when the winter comes along in Chicago in the month of November, the construction shuts down, and you're all walking around and trying to find something to keep the bread on the table. Remember, when you become a citizen or a resident, there's many steady jobs, like a bus driver or many of those things, and you have a paycheck every Friday, and when you do your 20, you have a 55% pension, so you don't do too shabby. And that stuck with me, and when I got out of the service and I had become an American citizen, I took their advice and I opted for a job that I would have a paycheck every Friday.
What job was that?
Pardon me, Katie?
What job was that, Mike?
Well, I had been a military policeman in the service, and I found out that as a military policeman, you're armed, you carry a sidearm with you, and you're dealing with servicemen and the public and one thing. I joined the police department and did my career there.
Ah. So you were in, how many years did you put down as a Chicago, in the Chicago police force?
No, I only give a few in Chicago. When I got out of the service, while I was in the service, I met two other Irish lads who were from, one with Mayo and one from Cavan. They were both in the Marine Corps, and both of them had did training out in California near San Francisco, and we got talking. And I was telling them about Chicago, the hot summers and the cold winters and these things, although I loved it. And they said, you know, the place to live is San Francisco. So
that's where you went. And you're saying Mike Pence gave you that advice to get a permanent pensionable?
He didn't specifically, but him and many more would have said the same thing, because they knew what it was like. They came out, they have seen the time of the Wall Street crash and what it was like if you had a steady job, even though it didn't pay great. You had it, a paycheck every Friday. Very, very important.
And what else do you remember, though, about Mike Pence's grandfather? Was he, I suppose we're all hearing now that Mike Pence is a conservative. He calls himself a Christian first, conservative second, and Republican third. Would he have been a very God-fearing man?
Look, put it this way to you, Katie. In those days, when we were in the Irish community and you asked somebody, where do you live? We didn't say, I lived at 45th and Aurora or 57th. We always said where we live by the parish we lived in. I lived, for example, on the Boulevard. That would have been Visitation. And then I moved to St. Rita's later on 63rd. So we defined ourselves. Now, to get back to where we were there, in those days, I was anywhere. We were all basically church-going good Catholics. That don't mean we were perfect, but it was the status quo, what we'd done. As far as Mike Pence's grandfather, I would say he was very much the same as everybody else. If you were at church there on a Sunday, you probably saw him and his family. That's the way it is.
And tell me, have you followed Mike Pence's career over the years?
No, I didn't. Basically, it was only when he became vice president that it dawned that was the first time I heard of him. Because being governor of Indiana is not earth-shattering news, right? It's just a governor of a nice little handy state. It would be a different thing if you were governor of California or governor of New York. Those things, they get the news. But governor of Indiana wouldn't be exactly from the top shelf now. But he obviously, he knew what he was doing, and although he didn't vote for Donald Trump seeing something in him that made him his vice president.
And would you be a Republican voter yourself, Mike?
Yes, I did. I rung alarm bells 3 years ago when I was on a live line with Joe Duffy, and I told Joe at the time, long before it was popular, long before it became known that he had a chance of getting the presidency, I voted for Donald Trump, and I'll vote again for him.
Would you?
Yes, I will.
And you'd have no qualms at all now, and there's
None
been a
whatsoever.
Lot of controversy, let's face it, Mike.
What's controversy about him? Give me one major one.
Well, and indeed, a lot of controversy about Mike Pence as well, and their the way they're handling migrants on the border there and the wall.
Sorry.
And
excuse me 1 minute, Katie. I'll just quickly say, on the Late Late Show with Joe Duffy, not Joe Duffy, what's his name on the Late Late
with
Show?
With Ryan Tuberty.
Brian Tuberty. He had Mary Robinson on. And Mary Robinson got a great bull of boss from the audience when she said that all the migrants and immigrants at the border should all be left into the United States. Just like that. Open the door and leave them in. It will be tiddly-boo time. Now, let me explain one thing further. I have a friend of mine at the moment who is in the National Guard in California and is down at the border. His parents are from Galway, by the way. And he's down at the border with the National Guard backing up the security there. I asked him, from aerial photographs, what have they taken and what they see? They have figured out that there is at least a million plus of people scattered from the Mexican. They're not Mexicans. They're scattered right down into Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador. And the new group coming are people from Africa that are going to South America and finding their way to the border. Now, Mary Robinson was our president, and she said they should all be left in. So maybe you could get Mary on the phone sometime and ask her, if you have 1 million plus of people queued up down there, they're ranging in age from 70 down to babies. The first thing would have to be done, they would have to get a medical, be treated. Most of them have no English, no education, no skills, etc. Now, first of all, even if you were through to an act, through executive order, lift them in, how would you house a million and a quarter people overnight? Where would you put them? Can you imagine the schooling system, the health problems these people have?
But you know what, Mike, though? Is it not the case, though, that, you know, I read out that tweet there from Mike Pence's own Twitter account this morning about his own grandfather's arrival on Ellis Island. He was part of the huddle masses.
Different time, Katie. And different scenario also. The people that arrived in Ellis Island arrived in a ship. And I've been at Ellis Island several times.
Difference does that make, Mike?
It made a difference because one thing, the people arriving in Ellis Island arrived on a ship. The maximum you had on a ship maybe was 100, 110 people, not a million and a quarter. Now, if tomorrow morning Donald Trump said, I'll make you all into America, do you know what would happen the next week down in that part of the country? There'd be another million and a quarter waiting to come in. And for somebody to tell me about what happened in Ellis Island in 1923 was a different world. And keep one thing in mind also. Not everybody that got off a ship in Ellis Island, if you failed the medical, you actually were sent back to the country you came from. Did you know that?
I'll take your word for it, Mike.
No, it did. Trust me, it did. Because I saw it on Ellis Island. I was showing the names of the people to on record who failed the medical and were sent back to their country they came from. And so it's a different thing having 100 people off a boat and having a million and a quarter queuing up below there. The million, the 110 people that got off a boat in Ellis Island.
I'm accepting your million and a quarter there, million and a quarter, I should say. But what is the who are we relying on for that statistic now?
It's aerial photographs taken of it, and they have done a survey on.
Mike, you're counting people from the air.
No. You have to do something in doing it. And they have also got these in all of their camps they have set up, where they're being fed and housed. And all you got to do is a multiple of it. It's not difficult to do it. If you look at the people that are stretched from the border right to Honduras, Nicaragua, in now into South America. What's the country down there? That's in
Guatemala.
No, the other one is South America.
Honduras.
No, the one in South America, the one that the dictator is there at the time. Come on, I have a blank at the moment. Anyway, to come back to the place where it was on the news.
Well, Venezuela.
All right. Venezuela. Half of Venezuela is trying to leave Venezuela and head for the United States. You have a whole transient crowd up there.
Okay, Mike, I want to bring in John Flanagan, who's down there in Doombeg.
I've one request for you, Katie.
Go on.
I'm going to the match between Dublin and Kerry next Saturday week, and I've been a good contributor to RTE. My Van Keeler is myself. See if you could find us two tickets, and you know how to find me.
Yeah, I'm in the queue for those tickets myself.
Oh, go on, Katie.
Listen, thanks for that. Thanks for that, Mike. I want to go to John Flanagan in... are you down there in Doombeg, John?
Yes, I'm just outside the village of Doombeg.
And what is the atmosphere in Doombeg like today?
Plenty of people around, camera crews bunting up around, and... as I said, you get next to, hopefully to see Mr. Pence this evening when he comes for dinner at Morrissey's, which is due around 5 or 6.
Do you think it'll make a big difference to Doombeg, you know, having this media focus down there again?
It won't have as big of an impact as Donald Trump's visit, but it's still the same. It's refreshing people's memories that Doombeg is still alive and well, and a small village can do so good at it. One of our descendants has actually got to the second highest in one of the biggest countries in the world.
Now, there's a bit of controversy, of course, about this. A lot of Democrats in Washington giving out, saying he's, you know, what's he doing staying and giving more publicity to President Trump's private property when all his, you know, public engagements are 140 miles away in Dublin.
Well, as I said, his engagements are in Dublin, but his boss owns the hotel which is here, so why wouldn't he stay, in fairness, in Doombeg? Of course, like, it's considering it wouldn't look supportive of Donald Trump if he stayed in one of the Dublin hotels at a cost to the state for extra security for those here. He has his own hotel, well, Donald Trump's hotel, and a fabulous golf course and near to the village, and he's coming to the village this evening. Downton McNally's, well, Morrissey's pub, Hugh McNally that has it now, like, and sure as this is, it all works out very nice like that.
Now, there's been some protesters out already, a lot of people taking issue with Mike Pence's conservative politics, I suppose you'd say. They say that he has, you know, taken stands in relation to LGBT people. They don't agree with his position on abortion. They have issues with his dealings with the children migrants at the border. Would you take any issue with any of that, John?
Well, see, Mike Pence's views are his views. Like, you have your views and I have mine, and every other subject is gone. But we all can't dictate what another person thinks or says. And I think in a free democracy, anyone should be entitled to say what they like. If you don't like what a person says, that's fine. But we can't protest here in Ireland to him, because we don't democratically elect him. It's the people of America that elect him, and it's, if they, like, we can jump up and down and say how bad he is or how good he is, that's irrelevant to the overall scheme of things. Like, America is the one that chooses him as was their governor and now their vice president. And
but I suppose...
Democratically elect him, and that's it, like.
I suppose, though, you can, you know, say how big a welcome should we be giving to him, you know, and endorsing the positions he's taken on these various issues.
Well, we're not endorsing his positions that he's taken by welcoming him. We're welcoming him back as one of the descendants of a person that left Doombeg in very, 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 very poor times, with no hope of anything here, and to transpire that his grandson has actually done so well for himself through hard work and education in a country, and then as it turned out to be vice president. That's what we're celebrating. His personal views, as far as I'm concerned, personally speaking, his personal views are his own choice, and he's not going to influence people's decisions whether they're pro for gays or whether they're pro for anti-abortion or abortion. Like, personal views are your personal views, and that's the way it should be left.
And you're delighted to see him there anyway?
Yeah, because it probably gives, as they said yesterday evening on RT, like, some people don't get a high-profile visitor, and to get one that would even claim to be of a descendant, to be claiming Irish roots was magnificent when Reagan claimed it. Ballyporeen and Obama for Moneygall. yet we had a president that actually bought a golf course and then became president, and then turned around and hired a vice president who's actually from Dunbeg. So we have two major figures with a major connection to a small village in the White Atlantic Way. So it is like it's a major bonus for Dunbeg. When was it anyway?
Okay. We'll see if people agree with you, John. Thanks for that. 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Cullum Smith, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well. You were listening to John there.
I was. So just a little background. I kind of turned off the radio, so I didn't really hear what was going on. But I've been living in the States for 30 years, and we had Obama for 8 years, and we didn't have a border crisis. We didn't have millions of people streaming across or lining up to cross the border from Mexico. I actually live 100 miles from the Mexican border. And then all of a sudden, we get Trump, and we have this manufactured crisis on the border. I have seen on Fox News, which is the most right-leaning news TV station in the U.S., where they're showing, it almost looks like trainloads of people coming up to the border, and they use old footage. They don't use, they don't use real live news feeds. And so it's just shocking that the idea is that all of a sudden there are millions of people or a million people waiting, lining up to cross the border. I don't really understand how Obama was able to manage the border for 8 years, and now all of a sudden it's the biggest catastrophe that the country is facing. And also, I find it unusual that it seems to be all focused on the southern border and not about any kind of, there's a lot of people fly into the U.S. and they overstay their visas, and that's not talked about, and that's fine. It's not really a huge issue. But the fact that it's all being focused on the southern border seems kind of like a racist policy to me.
So you think the whole thing is manufactured for political purposes, basically?
Oh, absolutely. Because if you look at the data, if you go online and you look at data when it comes to arrests of people crossing the border, and then you compare Obama to Trump. If you look at the 2017 and 2018 numbers, they have less arrests. How are they having less arrests at the border if they're having huge numbers of people trying to cross the border? So all the data is online. If you look at the numbers of people when it comes to amnesty. So amnesty used to be a thing where you could come to the border, you could say that you were, at risk, your life was in danger or being threatened, then you would have a hearing. And now they're saying that these amnesty hearings are being reduced. Now, I'm not really sure why that would happen, but this is red meat to the Republicans. Now, if you look on Republicans in the U.S., they seem to have a lot of fears about foreigners. And I've even been told now, in the last couple of weeks before I came over here, I was talking about immigration policy online with some friends on Facebook, and I was asked, why do you even live here? If you don't like it, why don't you go back to Ireland? Now, nobody's ever said that to me in the last 30 years. Nobody has ever said in a political discussion, if you don't like it in America, why don't you go back to Ireland? This seems to be a thing now where it's acceptable to instead of engaging in a conversation,
to say, just go home. Well, of course, we very famously, very recently heard Donald Trump use that kind of language.
Well, so it comes from the top, and it becomes acceptable. And if you look at the rhetoric, if you just look at Trump's tweets, and you don't look at anything else, and you read through them, and I actually signed up, I'm on Twitter, I added Trump just so I could see what was going on. And this is changing the entire dynamic of civil conversation in the United States, because Trump can use horrible terms talking about other people, it seems to be filtering down into discussions now. And the fact that Mike Pence is over here trying to talk about
were you delighted, Cullum, to hear that your holiday back home was coinciding with Mike Pence's arrival?
It's the worst. No, it's not the worst. It actually would have been worse if Trump landed here. That would be worse. But the fact that and also I want to make clear that the American brand of Christianity is nothing like the Irish brand of Christianity. The Irish brand of Christianity and Catholicism, scandals aside, there's consistent talk of compassion for other people and for empathy and the poor and the sick and the weak. And the Christian brand of Christianity is more like you have to stand on your own, you have to build your own life, and that if you're not successful, it's because either you haven't worked hard enough.
But isn't that the American way, though? Isn't that how you achieve the American dream, Cullum?
Well, yeah, but when you try to, when people talk about, you know, because I heard earlier he was mentioning that, you know, Pence as a Christian, you really have to look at the American brand of Christianity, of Christian. It's really not, there's not a lot of compassion in it.
So when you see Leo Varadkar today putting out the statement saying it's a pleasure to welcome Vice President Mike Pence and his wife Karen to Ireland, what do you say to that?
I'm a little disappointed, but I also know there's huge amount of the Irish economy depends on a good relationship politically, diplomatically with the U.S. But so it is just unfortunate that we're obviously the majority of the country in the U.S. is hoping that this term is over sooner rather than later, and we're hoping that, you know, it doesn't really matter who the next Democratic candidate is. We're just hoping that we can get a Democrat in office and restore some dignity to the office.
It's not looking so great though at the moment, is it, Colm?
Well, it depends on the polls, and it depends on who's going to turn out. Now, if we had almost a 51% voter turnout in 2016, that's shockingly low. And I'm hoping that the young people in the United States will see what's happening to their future, and will turn around and get out and vote. Obviously, the younger people and people of color, immigrants, in the majority vote democratically. They vote for Democrats. Bernie Sanders is a little far left for me, but I'll vote for him in a heartbeat. In fact, I'll vote for any Democratic candidate.
Okay, stay with us, Colin, because I have somebody on the line who I think would strongly disagree with you. Dara?
Yeah, hi.
Good afternoon, Dara.
I strongly disagree. The recent statistics is the African-American unemployment rate is at the lowest in the 50 years. Many of the minority groups are at the lowest unemployment in many, many years. Many of these immigration controls, I think, see, in Ireland we have a romantic image with the Democratic Party. I remember the 70s, I'm 58, you had a picture of the John F. K., the Pope, and a crucifix in the middle, and going down the country, many a house with soda bread and all the rest. So we, naturally enough, are very, have this kind of pro-Democratic Party tendency in Ireland. But the reality is, the migration is huge. It was being there. Many of the measures that are now talked about are now called racist, were actually put in by the Democratic Party, which, by the way, has links in the past, in the 1860s, to the Ku Klux Klan. So when people say that, let's say Donald Trump, they don't like his manner, like he says kind of locker boy stuff, which is not pleasant, but he didn't act them out like President Clinton. Oh. So I think in Ireland we have a fantasy about the Democrats are all good and the Republicans are all bad people. What they're doing in the Republican Party is that millions of jobs went overseas because they were discriminating against their own economy. There were, you know, people who took advantage of the U.S. Now, from the Irish point of view, we're in a corner because we want a lot of that overseas investment in Ireland. We're also in the corner because of Brexit. We're caught between the U.K. and EU. So many of these problems are hitting us, unfortunately. But the thing is, Donald Trump is a total patriot as far as I'm concerned. So his manner might be offbeat, but he's making America work again. There's no question about it.
Have you spent time in America, Darren?
I haven't. I'll be honest, I haven't. No.
Okay. So you're literally just watching the media.
Fox and ABC. But that's irrelevant. Like, there are many things many of us haven't done.
Well, no, I do think what media you're taking your lines from might be relevant.
I watch CNN, I watch RTE, BBC One, everything. So I just read between the lines. And if you, even on things like I'm a pro-lifer. So the basic human right is to me the right to life, which, okay, we've let go here. But, all the Democratic Party candidates are pro-abortion. So simply whether it's a Christian or a Catholic, whether it's humanitarian, you can course with compassion to anyone who does these things, but you don't approve. You know, you tolerate, but you don't accept. And what I'm simply saying is, when it comes to the crunch, whether I don't like, I mean, you mightn't be the most polite guy, you mightn't be the sort of guy you have in around South Dublin for afternoon tea or something like that. So what? He's delivering the goods for the people who've been ignored for 50 years.
Okay, stay there, Dara, because you're coming at this from an interesting perspective that we don't hear an awful lot of, maybe. I want to just put that to John before I let you go. John Flanagan, would any of that make you feel like, oh, this, you know, do we really need this kind of controversy in Doombeg?
Well, you see, we're not getting the controversy in Doombeg per pence, as I just look at it my way. It's, you call it there, Phil, about it. It's all diplomatic. It's all politics. And as I said, we do have to put out an image that we are dependent on the general public of America as tourists to come to this country. We don't have to agree with the politicians' views. We don't have to, we like them or dislike them. But at the end of the day, it's the people that will follow, the people that will book holidays here, and the people that will spend their money here from America. It's what's going to keep our economy going and our local people in employment. And as I said, Donald Trump, yeah, he's a controversial figure. Some people hate him, some people like him. But the other caller says he's getting America working. And like that.
And he's putting Doombeg on the map, John.
He has put it on the map for a long, long time, because since he came in June, tourists has been up. The golf course has been very, very busy. Has bookings got even for next year. And that's just secured in 300 jobs for our local area. My friends and people that I grew up with and the new people that has moved into the village. And it's just keeping us alive. So, like, Donald Trump to us is the same as Intel to Kildare. Like, it's a massive employer here. And we don't have to agree with them. And some people do and some people don't. But the people's wages just keep a roof over their head. It's what we want. And as your caller said, it's the people of America that have to decide next November whether they want him for another 4 years or whether they don't want him for another 4 years. But all the counties, the Trump empire and the Trump family will keep investing in this golf course and this local community.
Okay. Thanks for that, John. Billy. Good afternoon, Billy.
Good afternoon to you.
What's your view on Mike Pence and Donald Trump?
That second last speaker, I mean...
That's Dara Fitzgerald, yeah.
You're not talking from knowledge at all. And the first speaker I heard, he mentioned Ellis Island. 12 million immigrants came through Ellis Island. 98% of them were let through. Most of them had no money, no education, and they had no English. And yet they came through. And these are the people who helped to build America. I've been in America 5 times. I was only there recently. I've met a couple from Poland who are in America 30 years. They came over with no English, yet they built lives for themselves. And to treat people the way that the Republican government at the moment are treating people, dehumanizing them, is sickening. I mean, people should open their eyes.
Exactly.
It just sickens me to hear this white kind of racist stuff going on all the time. And it's equivocation. They're telling half-truths, but they're not telling the full truth. For instance, Mr. Trump was asked, or he mentioned about a Category 5 hurricane. He never said he'd never heard of one. Yet they went back and forth with saying, encountering that situation 3 times and mentioning Category 5 hurricane. Everything is not the truth. And I don't know what agenda they have. The great John Lennon, the Beatles, said 50 years ago, insane people run the world. And if you were alive today, he'd say they're ludicrous, completely ludicrous. I just get annoyed when I hear people backing this kind of right-wing agenda. And that first man, he must be an immigrant himself. And, you know, he got a chance. And America is huge. There's plenty of space there. If you go to Seattle, which is a very liberal city, everybody is treated not according to their colour, not according to their race, our religion, but according to how they behave and how they work.
Okay,
and it's a great cultural city as well.
Okay, yep. So please stay with us there, please, Billy. Helen, good afternoon. Yes. Helen O'Driscoll.
Hi, how are you? Listen, I just want to clear up some things first. President Obama deported over 2.5 million people, men, women and children, from 2014 until the time he left in particular. That's when the caravan started. There weren't any people shouting racism and all of this kind of thing at the time. They just don't like this particular party. They don't like Trump. They don't like any of that. But the idea that this just started and this crisis just started in the last 2 years is just false. It's false, absolutely false.
Can I respond to that?
Colm, do you want to? Yeah, that was your point.
It's absolutely false, unless the Department of Justice are rewriting everything, and Border Patrol are as well. And furthermore, the thing about with the children that are being brought there, and everyone is concerned about that.
These are the children. We're seeing pictures of children in cages down at the border.
Yes. I'm very, very. President Obama set those up, and the reason he did is if you come across illegally, not legally, people are conflating illegal immigration with legal immigration. They let in over a million a year, legally, over a million a year into the U.S. It's just not true to say that they're not. If you want to seek asylum, you go. The best way to do it is to go to an embassy. Nine of them.
Okay, Helen.
In Mexico, this is madness. All this stuff, and some of the children, the people, human traffickers that are using children in this way. You don't even know if they're related to all of the adults that they're with. Are you going to let them off then, and then you never see them again, and you don't even know? They said 30% of them are not even related to the adults.
Again, Helen, a lot of statistics get thrown around here. We don't. You cannot possibly know how many of those children are related to the adults that they travel with.
And that was U.S. Border Control did that.
Can I say something?
They had to start doing DNA testing because traffickers use particularly non-verbal children in order to get the adults across. That's what they do. These are not nice people. These are not looking for, they're using all kinds of people. These have got human trafficking on an industrial scale.
Okay.
And to pretend that this is just people looking for a better life, it's just not true at all.
Can I get Colm to respond to you there, Helen?
Yeah, so I there's been a lot of statements that have been made in the last 5 or 10 minutes, and I always take notes because I do get a lot involved in a lot of political discussions, and I prefer to use facts, data, information, charts. Like I said, I work in government, so we have to use data. And I do notice that on Fox News and Sky News, they tend to use incendiary rhetoric to get people to
Sky News.
Let me finish.
Yeah, but don't get Fox News. Sorry, I don't get Fox News.
I let you speak. You brought up yes, Obama did deport people. He had ICE that would go and they would track down people and they would deport them. The difference, there's a clear, distinct difference between the Obama policy and the Trump policy. The Trump policy is designed specifically to terrorize. It's designed specifically to terrorize women and children, to make people believe that they're doing everything they possibly can to protect the border. Yeah, you're right. Obama was much more efficient. He had a brilliant administration, and he was able to effectively manage immigration. That's why I'm saying, if you look at the numbers and the facts and the data and the information, you can see that this border crisis is manufactured. It's not being handled correctly. The cages are being filled with women and children, and that's not the way it was in the past. It was
violent offenders. Who set those cages up? And what I'm saying to you is
Obama wasn't efficient at all.
It's because he was beloved by the media and it wasn't covered. There was just as many caravans coming up from 2012 up.
Show me the data.
Trump said at the beginning of this year that there was a crisis on the border.
Yes.
The Democratic Party, to the last person, said he was making it up and there wasn't a crisis.
There's been 1,200 documented lies. The Washington Post keeps track of all the lies that Trump has said.
Listen. Of course they do. Yeah.
I know you look at the Washington Post, which is also the
Yeah, I do, actually. I look at the Washington Post. I look at a lot of different media. I don't get Fox News and I don't watch Sky, so I really don't know where you think I'm getting my information from.
Well, it's certainly
correct. And you are not being honest here. And you are not talking about the people traffickers, and you're not talking about the fact that they don't know who a lot of these children are.
Okay, Helen, you don't send
children off with complete strangers.
Helen, I can't have you accusing another caller of being dishonest. I think you have a different view.
Let's put it that way. He doesn't have his facts correct. Let's put it that way.
Well,
if you don't want that. Unfortunately, if you don't know, if you have a non-verbal child there and you don't know if that child is related to the adult they were with, what do you do? Do you let them go off, never to be seen again in the country? Or what do you do with them?
Do you know what?
You have to find out who they are first, don't you?
Helen, can I just ask you, do you believe that all those children who have been separated from their parents and who have been kept in detention at the border, that that's all for their own good?
I think until they find out if those are their parents or their relatives, yes, I do. I would much rather a child be safe and with their family than sent off with an adult who you don't know who they are.
So this
is she aware that they've lost track, that the U.S. government has lost track of who the people that were accompanying those children? And those children now are in foster care, and those children, many may not be reunited with their parents because there is no record.
I think it's absolutely terrible.
So forced separation of children is terrible.
But that's even more reason why this needs to be stopped before it gets to that point. It's terrible I wouldn't want them sent off with complete strangers either, because we're too lazy to find out who they are.
Okay, Helen, I need to bring in Tom now. Tom, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
You've been listening to our discussion.
I have indeed.
And
yes.
Where are you on this?
I was driving back from the west coast of Ireland this morning, dropping my wife off to Shannon Airport, and we've seen the Penn security around the place, very proud to have them in my country, and it all went well, and the police were very professional, and it's great to see them off and having a few hours of R&R. Speaking about that Democratic supporter there, my wife and I were Democratic supporter and voters for close to 30 years in America in a Democratic state of New Mexico. And my wife has spent the last 32 years teaching illegal immigrants in her classroom, because every child deserves a free education in America. And it's very deflating when you walk into your classroom day after day and you're teaching people that you know shouldn't be there. And I, coming from Ireland, had no Espanol in me when I went to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I had to learn to speak fluent Spanish, Mexican Spanish, so I could continue my work there. And also, the reason why there was quite a few, maybe 100,000 illegal immigrants not accounted for in the Obama administration is because they had sanctuary cities in Democratic states like New Mexico and San Francisco, and they let them in without documenting them under the Obama administration, and they used those people for Democratic votes. And I've seen that. I have had boots on the ground there for years. I've experienced it firsthand. And my wife and I were proud...
Tom, just to be clear of what you're actually alleging there. You're alleging that Democratic politicians set up sanctuary cities, as you say, invited and brought immigrants illegally into the state in order to vote and support the Democratic vote for Congress
Absolutely. Even right now, as we speak here, if you call up the mayor of San Francisco on the record, he'll say, come on over here, we'll take care of you.
How can they vote if they're not on the voter roll?
I was going to say, how do they get around that?
On the voter roll. Let me explain the voter roll. I was down on the borders of New Mexico for a long time in Brownsville in Texas and all across Arizona doing my work. Okay, mucho tobacco. And what I've seen the illegal Mexicans do with the Mexican cartel is to get illegal voting cards to vote Democratic. I've seen it with my own two eyes, mister.
So I've seen it on the registry
for years,
it's not a card
under Obama administration.
My
wife and I voted in his first inauguration for Obama, Michelle, Sasha, his daughters, Malaya, and we were proud of it. We even went to Ireland with this Is Fidher Lynn thing. We went to Moneygall, but after his 4 years, we've seen the statistics and what he wasn't doing for my wife. My wife in Santa Fe, New Mexico, was protecting her with the illegal immigrants flooding into the school system, which is costing my wife and me a fortune on taxes. It's absolutely horrendous. Under Mr. Trump, God bless him, he's doing the right thing. And has done so from day one. And he's also kept his agenda, his top of policies, policies up front. The wall is being built. You don't hear that from CNN. That wall is being built slowly but surely. CNN is, you know, totally anti-Republican. Fox is, you know, semi Republican. So, there's a lot going on. In the media has a lot to do with this.
Okay,
with
Tom, can I just get a handle on this? You were a Democrat supporter. Yourself and your wife both supported and voted for Obama. And somewhere in the course of Obama's time in the White House, you had a change of heart and decided that actually this is a disaster and there's too many illegal immigrants coming into this country.
Absolutely. And there was absolutely hundreds of thousands getting over the Rio Grande. I've seen them myself. And they weren't accounted for. And they were
now, in fairness, Tom, I don't think you saw hundreds of thousands of people personally going over the Rio Grande. I don't think you actually personally can stand over what that... And again, you again told us you saw many people illegally getting cards, voting cards to vote for the Democrats. Again, you cannot really have seen them in the numbers that you are claiming to have seen. So we have to kind of accept that, you know, you've seen this, we haven't seen it.
Yes. What I've seen is absolutely all set up through the Obama administration to get votes. And that's a fact. And there's people working, I won't mention the companies in America right now. And my wife knows they're illegal, I know they're illegal, they're working there illegally.
But sure, Tom, there's plenty of Irish people we don't say. Use the word illegal very often when we talk about Irish immigrants in the States. We could say undocumented, but there is plenty of undocumented Irish working in the States as well now.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be there then, right? If they're undocumented, it shouldn't be there. They broke some sort of law. You know, this goes both ways. If you're illegal from any country, you shouldn't be there. But the wave of South American people coming over the border can entice an election.
Okay.
Right now in the United States, there are probably Irish people who are illegal in the United States. And what I find unusual is that it's the rhetoric and the policies from this administration. It's different. So one of the callers called in and said, Obama deported 2.5 million people. And then this guy says, there's hundreds of thousands coming across the border while Obama was in power. Well, which one was it? Was he letting hundreds of thousands across the border, or was he deporting 2.5 million people? I'm not exactly sure what the point is from either of these callers, but all of this information is available online, and I challenge people to just use Google and just go to the sources of information. The U.S. government has lots of ways of gathering information, and it doesn't really matter who the administration is.
Okay, Colm, I do want to cut across you, but I have to go to a break now.
Yeah,
please stay with us, because we've got a lot of calls coming in on this. 51551 is our text.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Ali Kennedy, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
Ali, are you calling us from Chicago?
Yes, I'm from Maynooth and living in Chicago since about 2011.
Okay, and you've been following our discussion, obviously.
You know, the last man that was on there really said it really well. Like, make up their mind, which is it? Obama either let everybody in, or he sent everybody out. And basically what you're hearing there today is just kind of the mass hysteria with the older Irish community. It was quite evident there with those callers, you know, people running over the border and thousands and millions, and they don't even have facts, you know. It's quite different for young people that have moved over here. We have a different experience of this, of Trump and Pence and the immigration policy. These people, the older community that live here, they've made it. They've lived their life. They've struggled maybe early on. Maybe they came over on a lottery green card, or they were given a green card maybe. And it's a very different experience. Like, they don't realize there's so many undocumented Irish workers here. And it might be undocumented is the word we use, but they're illegal. And loads of people came over here that were illegal. And why are we different to the people that are coming from other countries? Like, is it because we're white and they're brown? Like, basically, that's it at the end of the day. And celebrating Mike Pence and doing big and falling over him. Like, one woman said about creating jobs and we're on the world stage because, you know, basically we're honouring Trump and we're associated with Trump. Look, you could make another Moneygall down in Dunbeg and make it an anti-Trump town, and you'd have tons of visitors coming in, you know? So, like, they need to get real about the whole thing. If you were living out here, you'd see a city like Chicago where there's huge...
Ali, I'm going to have to stop you because I'm afraid the line is after going on us. But we did, we did manage to get your point very well across there. And I want to bring in maybe Colleen. Colleen Maloney, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi, Colleen. You'd be on the same page as Ali there, really, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah. No, I agree with what Ali was saying there with the points that she was making, yep.
And what, you were listening to our... other callers that had maybe a very different position on this and on the immigration issue in the States in particular. What did they...
I think that a lot of people have a very, I don't know, a misinformed opinion of what's going on in America. And, you know, it's one thing, like you had a caller earlier who had never even been to America, but he wanted to make all of these, you know, comments about how Trump has got America back to work and all of these kinds of things. It's just, as the other guy who you were speaking with earlier said, all the actual information is out there. Like if you, you know, if you go online, if you pay attention to the unbiased news organizations, like RTE, like the BBC, you know, stay away from things like Fox News, which, you know, putting news in the title of your organization doesn't mean that you're a news organization. You know, it's basically a propaganda machine for the Republican Party in America. And, you know, it's lies. And unfortunately, the American people have been lied to, you know, not wholly unlike, you know, all the British people who were lied to and, you know, encouraged to vote for Brexit. And now they're all regretting that. You know, there are plenty of people who were lied to just bold-faced lies about what Trump was going to do and how bad Obama was and all of these things that don't hold up when you look at the facts.
You're American yourself, Colleen.
I am. Mm-hmm.
And have you been in Ireland long?
About 5 years.
So when you see today the Taoiseach welcoming Mike Pence to the country and saying he's a great friend of Ireland.
You know, I know he has to. You know, he has to say that because America's America and we have all, you know, the military and the bombs and the money and the people. He has to say that, you know, but as I was saying to one of your colleagues, it gave me a little bit of joy, the fact that, you know, Pence had to invite Leo and his partner to, you know, lunch earlier in the year when they were in America. You know, they have to do that, and it's politics, and I get it. It does make me sad to see, because I wish that the people over here who have kind of a better, more inclusive, you know, more democratic idea of inclusivity and, I don't know, tolerance and the idea that, you know, it's not just one way, that you kind of have to live with people and, I don't know, look after people, you know, it's, which goes back to Christ's teachings that they all hold up, but, you know, but they work against all the time. It would be nice if the people over here, the leaders over here, could actually say what they would like to say to Trump and to Pence and to these people.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for that, Colleen. I'm going to have to take a break. 51551.